Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hey everyone, and welcome to All Together, the Family Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Dina Sargent. Let's get started.
Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm Marie here once again to fill in for Dina while she's away on a personal matter. Today, we're discussing the causes and effects of familial estrangement, an occurrence that can lead to all sorts of undesirable feelings from loss and grief to isolation. And understanding this can help anyone in such a situation navigate their own mental health and seek appropriate support. So we're speaking to Vanita Mehta, a licensed clinical psychologist, writer and media expert. In her psychology practice, she works with both adults and teenagers, and she also has a few articles on parenting estrangement under her belt. And interestingly enough, one article even expressed that parental estrangement can have positive effects. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more on that perspective. Hi, Vanita. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me. I hope you're also doing well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us. Could you tell us a bit about how you developed your interest and perspective on parental estrangement?
Well, yeah, I work as a clinical psychologist. This is my office here in Washington, D.C. And in the last few years, I would say maybe the last 5 to 8, I noticed that there were more and more people talking about a family member who they were distancing themselves from, or had perhaps cut off ties with, and that they were struggling. And I think that it was the sheer number and the degree to which they were really trying to get their footing again. And so that was what, so it was really the clinical work that prompted my interest in seeking out where this, you know, what the state of the research was. And that really just opened up a whole new understanding into something that has become much more widespread than at least I had ever realized, and as I've then learned also among my colleagues.
That's interesting. And have you managed to find out why this number has grown so much?
I think that it's because people are just much more open in talking about toxic and abusive relationships. And I think with that openness and the stigma really beginning to thaw, if you will, that I think that people are feeling that they can talk about it, that they can do it more as a result of feeling less stigmatized. I think it's been there for a long time in some form or another, not a complete cut off, then certainly very distanced relations.
Yeah, for sure. That kind of reminds me about how, like, a lot of people like to say, why is everyone becoming autistic? Or like, why is everyone suddenly neurodivergent? And it's not that suddenly everyone's becoming that. It's been around. It's just that now we have more research and now more people are getting diagnosed. So that's pretty similar. And it's a great preface to our topic for today. But before we get started and digress, I'd love to get to know you better. This is Have You Met Vanita? So my first question for you is, what do you like to do in your spare time?
I like to work out. I like to be outside. My partner, Adam, and I, we like to go out for, we like to enjoy fine dining here in D.C. And I could talk about this more later. I'm also an emerging screenwriter. So I have to do a lot of writing and outside of my practice and my
work. Wow. That's incredible. You sound like you're doing a lot, and I do appreciate the occasional fine dining too. Is there a favorite restaurant that you go to, or like a favorite cuisine of yours?
I would say if you live in Washington, D.C., that Jose Andres has a whole kind of restaurant conglomerate. And he's recognized around the world for all of his efforts for peace and helping those in need, and his restaurants, just those issues aside, his restaurants are just top notch.
And what's the best thing or the most memorable dish that you've had in one of these restaurants?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to say it's the tres leche cake for me. It's
really okay. That sounds really, really good. So apart from your hobbies and your interests, do you read any books?
Yes, I do. I actually just read a book that was written by a social psychologist called Never Saw Me Coming. And it is a female version of the show You that I so it was really
okay. Yeah.
And on top of it, I got to meet the author because she's a friend of a friend. She lives here in DC.
That's amazing. And I love the show You. So that's definitely a book I need to check out. But do you have like favorite genres?
I really enjoy, I enjoy procedurals quite a bit. I'm going to take that back a little bit. I really enjoy, I'm kind of obsessed with Nordic noir television. I think that with the shows that are coming out of Denmark, Iceland, Finland, Sweden, I think I might be missing one. But those are, and did I say Denmark? Because Denmark, oh my goodness, you have been so good to me in terms of television. But I think really what, and Norway, obviously. So I think that what's coming out of the Nordic countries is really some of the best told stories on television in the world, in my opinion.
So would you say that the storytelling is what drew you into this genre?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things, I think as a psychologist, you know, I was attracted to a couple of things. One is that the characters in this genre, you can call it Scandi noir, you can call it Nordic noir, but they have very strong female characters with deep wounds that they are trying to, you know, work out. And then also then there's this, you know, sort of puzzle or mystery of who did the crime. And when we work as a psychologist, a lot of that's sort of the process of therapy. You're trying to dig deeper and you're getting clues into like, what happened? What happened to you? So I think that's my attraction to that genre in particular.
Absolutely. That's really, really interesting. And I don't think I've ever watched a film from a genre before, but I think I've got to check it out. You really sold it to me. So is there a podcast that you listen to?
Oh, gosh, I listen to different screenwriting podcasts. I enjoy some true crime podcasts, having once worked in that kind of space and for network news. But I wouldn't say that there's one particular podcast that I'm following right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm a bit more of, you know, just because what I do, because I'm with people so much. So
yeah, for sure. It's like something to kind of get you in like in the same space, and it's related to what you do, and it kind of feels like you're learning as you go at the same time. So it's a little bit of like a productivity thing as well, I imagine. My last question, sorry.
Just interrupt. I'm so sorry. I would just say that there have been some wonderful podcasts on the New York Times website. The New York Times is just very enlightening, and I really just enjoy a lot of their investigative journalism, and sort of even their I think their work on health is really, really fantastic as well.
Yeah, I do love the New York Times too, but I've never actually listened to any of their podcasts. Is there one that you recommend?
I enjoy whatever, you know, I like to enjoy, I kind of look, I guess it's called the health vertical. So it's like the health articles, the health podcast. Yeah. They come into my email and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. So
yeah, that sounds amazing. I should really check it out. So my last question for you is, who do you look up to the most in life, be it professionally or personally?
Oh gosh. I would say that this may sound like a little bit of a fan girl. I'm gonna give you two if that's okay.
That's perfectly fine.
I would just say is I think they're both incredible role models in their own way. I think Madonna is a really, like, I just think artistically, and I think she's just amazing. And what she has to say about female empowerment is just so important. And if you grew up with her in the generation that I did, that the way that she really modeled for other people how other women, how they could be self-empowered. I think she had something very important to say across the generations. I would also say that as a Washingtonian, you can't help but love the Obamas. They made this city come alive. Their work in every sort of, obviously politics, but they just do so much to make the world a better place. So I really look up to them as well.
Absolutely. You're not the only one. I mean, well, I'm not in the right, I'm definitely not in the right generation to like have Madonna as a role model, but I feel like my version of Madonna is probably Taylor Swift. And that might be an insult to some people, but I feel like that's the kind of like the equivalent of our generation's female role model. And for the Obamas, I feel like, it's not limited to just people living in Washington, D.C. Globally, people look up to the Obamas. So you're in good company there. Thank you so much for answering all those questions and sharing that with us. I feel like we got to know you a bit better. Yes, did you want to add something?
I wanted to add one thing, which is that this is a full circle kind of thing here, because I've had one live Michelle Obama sighting, and it was actually the first and only time that I ever saw her was at a Jose Andres restaurant.
Boy, no way.
Kind of thing.
Oh, wow. And what was your reaction when you saw her?
I kind of could peer a little bit into the back room, sort of. And so, I mean, it was just to be like, I mean, first of all, we all had to go through security to get in. We had no idea where until we got in. So, but it was, just to be that close to people that you knew, that you just admired so much.
And what were you feeling on the inside? I imagine you must be like, your heart must be like palpitating or something. I would do that.
Can't help but feel giddy. You really can't help. Oh, and by the way, and to bring it even more full circle, I'll be seeing Madonna here in Washington in concert.
Amazing. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Lots of really good moments there. I'm really excited for you. But before we digress, let's get into the interview section, the main portion of the recording. My first question for you is, what do you think a family is?
Well, I think a family ideally is a place where you feel unconditionally loved, worthy of love and care, and where you can be nurtured to be your true self, and where boundaries are respected and honored, and where, if we're talking about a traditional family structure, which is what most people are born into, not everybody, but most people, then you would have, parents and children, and where parents are parents and where children are children. And so that there's a sense of safety, security, love, and warmth. That would be your family.
And would you agree or disagree that today there's no longer a universal definition of family?
I do agree with that. I think as modern lifestyles kind of evolve into what they have, with people being more mobile, and people used to live very close to home or in multi-generational homes, and now people scatter much more, that the idea of who your family is can change if you're a transplant. But again, if we go back to what has been happening more and more in a more open way, we should say, estrangements, that we are now acknowledge are happening, then we are seeing more and more chosen family, where people are really being much more intentional about the networks that they're building of who are their kind of, it was a very close friend of mine calls it his ride or die. Who's going to really be there for you? And so there is, you can say the family that you're born into, but then also the family that you choose.
Yeah, for sure. And what do you think the position of a family is in today's society with that in mind?
I think it's still a very important unit. I mean, I think it's different depending on where you are. In India, for example, where my parents came from, having multi-generational homes is, it's pretty much the standard. And we see a version of that in the U.S. where parents will move in with children as they get older. In the West, I see, among my, non-Indian American friends, I guess you would say, I see a little less of that. But I think that the idea of family is broadening out to people that perhaps aren't what we would say blood relations or the family that you necessarily grew up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And do you think it still holds the same importance as how it did decades ago?
I think there's a lot more fluidity than there used to be. I don't think that I think that before was, you were kind of born into a family and it would kind of perhaps limit you in all kinds of ways, maybe in terms of the vocation that you would choose or the education that you would attain or where you could live. But it seems to me that there is more mobility as opportunity grows, as travel grows, people move for jobs, but can still stay connected to people. Look, we're on two different continents right now, but we're having a conversation in real time. It's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I really agree with you with the fluidity thing there. I feel like as people move apart from their families, they also kind of learn new things about themselves, and they don't, it's not necessarily like disregarding your biological family as your family, but it's more of just like they're still your family. It's just you're learning more about yourself and kind of getting that independence a little bit, so it's not necessarily like it's less important or anything like that. It's just a little bit of independence, a bit of personal growth. So how would you define family estrangement?
A family estrangement, technically speaking, is when there is a growing distance physically, emotionally, because of longstanding negativity in the relationship. So what that might look like is fewer phone calls, moving away, less engagement, and so that there's a kind of a pulling away from the relationship because of we say broadly negativity, but negativity can refer to different things. It could be abuse. It could be because of a severe substance abuse issue, different forms of maltreatment or neglect. So those kinds of issues can certainly, make the question of estrangement a central one.
Mm-hmm. I imagine it's pretty similar to breakups in romantic relationships too, where it could either play out really slowly and one party's like giving all the hints of like, get it together, or like, I'm not going to be around for much longer, or it could just end very abruptly for various reasons. So apart from what the reasons you shared with me, what are some other common reasons for family estrangement, do you think?
I think that a lot of what I've seen in my practice is neglect, abuse, an unwillingness to think flexibly about one contribution to a toxic dynamic. So I think I would say broadly toxic relationships and toxic communication.
Yeah, probably a lot of just stark differences in opinions on certain things that are really important to either party might do that too. But what is the process like? Are there any signs that estrangement might be approaching? And is it worth trying to circumvent this? And when is it not?
It's a great question, but every case, I think, as these things go, are unique. Becoming estranged from a family member is extraordinarily distressing. I've never worked with anybody where it was an easy decision. Even in situations of abuse, it's not easy to say, I'm not going to talk to a family member anymore, because we think of family members that those relationships are supposed to be sacred. And so I think if you're seeing more and more people are not wanting to engage around holidays, or you're not hearing from people as much anymore, or you're getting cut off on social media, you know, that the quantity and the quality of communication are usually the signals that that there could be an estrangement in process.
Yeah. And how does the dynamic of a family play a role in the likelihood of an estrangement occurring?
Again, that can be very specific to the individual. A lot of it could actually do with how other people in the family are reacting to the toxic dynamic. So you could have a situation where one sibling is experiencing something very toxic with one or both parents, but the other feels that that is not happening. And so the person who, you know, the sibling who speaks up about it then becomes the scapegoat. And that's something that I've seen a bit where they're not even being heard about, you know, what their concerns are, or being shut down. That's all in your head. That's actually not happening here, which can actually hasten an estrangement.
And could you give us a bit more detail into how family estrangement can impact individuals psychologically, considering factors like depression, anxiety, or resilience?
Well, it's individual, but I would say that usually, whether it comes first or whether it comes later, there's a feeling of relief from the toxic dynamic and the sort of the liberation of being treated poorly. And so I would say this, usually as an estrangement is underway, and then eventually, a decision of, am I going to go low contact or no contact comes about. At some point, there's often a feeling, even if you were the one who initiated the estrangement, it can still feel like an abandonment, because in a sense, usually when it's like a child-parent estrangement, the child has felt abandoned over the course of their lives anyway.
Yeah.
So this sort of almost like the trauma becomes recapitulated, repeat. And so then from there, there's usually a very kind of profound period of grief, because it is, whether even if the dynamic was toxic, and still an extraordinary loss that makes you feel so vulnerable. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to be estranged because it feels like you are so very alone in this world and that you don't come from a place.
Yeah, I've got to imagine that's really conflicting, because on one hand, you feel like you're finally free and you don't have to put up with it anymore, and you know that there's good ahead in your future. But at the same time, it doesn't make it any less heartbreaking. And, you know, you've dealt with the heartbreak for your entire life, or at least a very long extended period of time. So it's a very conflicting feeling. So how should people go about dealing with that?
I think that one thing that I think can be very helpful is to seek professional help for something as serious as a family estrangement. Again, these are sacred bonds, and it can create all kinds of emotions that may make a person feel, for at least a period, uncontained. Now, that said, I just want to put out a caveat that it's also really important to find a therapist who will validate, support, and recognize that for some people, estrangement could be the answer. And I think that a lot of psychologists will generally recognize, like, if you can make an accommodation and it's not going, and the cost isn't too high, then that's something to explore. But when the cost becomes too high, I think that it's really important to see a therapist who understands that sometimes people do have to leave very, very bad situations. So yeah, I'm speaking in broad terms, but, generally speaking, if an accommodation can be made, but sometimes that's just not possible.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I feel like that disclaimer that you just put out there does hold true for many other situations as well. It's like you've got to find a therapist that can really understand what you're going through, and understand what you need to do. And it might not seem like, you know, the stereotypical answer or something like that, but they've got to understand the weight of your situation. And sometimes some people just are unable to do it, and it's no fault of their own, but it's important to be speaking to someone who can empathize with it. So I agree there. What are some therapeutic approaches that have been proven effective in addressing and healing from family estrangement?
I think we borrow from mostly from trauma, because a lot of what led up to the estrangement were traumatic circumstances. And then also we borrow from grief, from the grief literature, because it is a loss. It's even what we would call an ambiguous loss, where the person may be physically absent but psychologically present. And so that's a much more complicated form of grief than if somebody were to just, you know, pass away. And then we also can borrow from post-traumatic growth, you know, where you would never have wished for the event to happen, but nonetheless, you can still grow beyond where you were before the event and make meaning in your life as a result of what happened, and help other people. Those are the three that I borrow from the most when working with clients who are wherever they are in the cycle, life cycle of an estrangement.
So could you tell us about the positive effects of family estrangements?
Well, I'm really glad that you asked that question, because there are for some people good reason to do it. You know, in situations where there's been abuse, trauma, you know, ongoing toxicity, to free yourself of that, it can be really the most liberating kind of gift you can ever give yourself. Granted, you know, the processing of the grief and the loss is very difficult, but you can, you know, there's also a chance to be able to grow, to be able to create relationships that are perhaps, you know, more healthy, or we would say less transactional or conditional, that are free of maltreatment or abuse. Frankly, I keep bringing up that word, but it is a big reason why people feel like they need to flee their families.
Yeah, completely, Faye. It's so fine that you bring up that word. I feel like it's necessary. It's not something that everyone likes to talk about or hear about, but it's like, you know, you've got to call a spade. You've got to call it what it is. The more you talk about it, the more, the less stigmatized it becomes. So that's great. So thank you so much for answering my questions and for sharing that with us. Now we're moving on to the practice/habit section. My first question for you is, what is a practice that you recommend doing to cope with the potential occurrence of a family estrangement?
One that I would say very broadly is to ask yourself, what is it I feel I need? And that can be very different things. I need to connect with somebody who really loves me. I need to get more sleep. I need to eat something that's going to make me feel nourished. I need to exercise. I need to stretch my body. And the reason why I suggest this is because there is a way in, you know, these toxic relationships with a family member where we really where we have to almost leave ourselves, or we have to leave what it is that we need in order to defend ourselves in a toxic dynamic. So I would say broadly to stop and check in with yourself, what do I feel I need? If you are a parent, it might also be appropriate to ask, what does my child need in order to be able to continue to support a child who might be also affected by an estrangement. So that's another important component.
And what are three good things about doing this practice?
I think it helps people feel centered. I think it helps people stay whole because in a traumatic situation, you can feel very fragmented. Your mind and body can kind of feel fractured from one another. You can sometimes be living on the kind of the surface of your mind, and where life is just sort of whizzing by because it's too painful. And I really like this practice because it brings the focus back to the self, and it also helps to, it encourages people to soothe themselves. And that can be lacking in again, you know, what are the kinds of dynamics that would cause an estrangement, and having to ignore what your own needs are to abandon yourself would probably be part of that.
Yeah, and I also imagine that it kind of acts as like a reminder for yourself as to like why you did this, because after some amount of time you might end up missing your family members. You probably will end up missing your family members that you've been estranged from, and you probably will start thinking like, or maybe I've made a huge mistake, and that practice sounds like it helps with reminding you why you had to do that very difficult task in the first place. And it also acts like a debrief almost to kind of you know, get you back on track. But are there any challenges to doing this practice?
Are there challenges? I think that the challenge would probably be to be able to actually act on it. That you might know or identify what it is that you need, but it's going to be most useful if you can actually respond to what it is that you need.
Absolutely.
I'd also just like to add, if I could, another really important is acceptance. Acceptance is part of grief. Accepting that this is just what the situation is. And I think it could be a very helpful question to ask yourself, what is really possible? What's really possible with this relationship or in this situation? Usually for people who are entertaining an estrangement, again, if accommodation can be made, that's wonderful. But if estrangement is where it's going to go and that's what's best for an individual, then I think that it's important to begin to be comfortable with accepting that this is just what the situation is.
That is so well said. Do you have any last pieces of advice or key takeaways for our listeners to think about?
I would say that connect with people who love you and will validate you and support you. Breaking off a relationship with a family member, as I said, it's heartbreaking, it's wrenching. And I would really hope that people would seek help and not go through it by themselves.
That is so important. Thank you so much for your time. Now we're moving on to the open mic section, and this is your chance to talk about whatever it is that you're passionate about that doesn't have to be related to the topic. So the floor is yours. Take it away.
Oh, wow. I would say something that I'm really passionate about is storytelling and the power of storytelling. And so I started out as, I've gone back and forth between media and the psychology world, I guess you could say, across my career, and now finding that they are braiding and winding together in these really interesting ways. And so I just think that, you know, for a lot, when you're a psychologist, you listen to other people's stories and you help them rewrite their narratives. You help almost like edit their idea of who they are, the stories that they tell about themselves, as people make insights and they discover more about themselves. And, you know, as Freud would say, you know, as you excavate the mind, you know, your stories about who you are, where you came from, will change over time. And I would say that now, as I am, that is one way that I've worked with stories. And now another way that I'm working with stories is actually to write and create them. And so one story that I'm working on right now is actually about a psychologist whose husband gets into all kinds of trouble, and she has to read her own self-help book to heal. It was actually ghostwritten for her in the story. So that's one that I've got underway. And so I really enjoy writing stories about psychology and psychologists and bringing in psychological kind of nuggets, things that people can kind of hook into and relate to. But I think that, you know, when I look at the power of stories, you know, one of my very favorite movies is Ordinary People, which is decades old. I mean, this movie is on a whole other level and actually has to do with family estrangement. It's the premise of the movie is that this perfect family, the older son dies in a boating accident, and how that event kind of tears the family apart, especially the mother and the son. And it is, when I saw that movie, and when I watched it later as an adult, I just thought to myself, this is so powerful. How many people, how is this story has helped so many people? And I should give the novelist Judith Guest a shout out, because it was actually adapted from her book. So, and
directed, that's amazing.
The movie directed by Robert Redford. And it was just, they were all in the zone. You will not be sorry for watching that movie.
That sounds like an amazing title, and I have to check it out at some point. And I love how your interests and your work all intertwines, and you let it bleed into your side projects. That's always really, really nice to see. Thank you so much for sharing with us about that, and for joining us as well. I learned so much about estrangement and how it can be a good thing in the long run, while simultaneously being a really painful and heartbreaking thing. So if our listeners want to find out more about you, where can they go?
So I have a blog with Psychology Today, so psychologytoday.com, but the name of my blog is called Head Games. You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Vinita Mehta, and then my Twitter handle is terrible, but I do have one. I'll tell you how bad I am at Twitter, at Vinita Mehta 2.
I love that. I love bad usernames. It gives a bit of character, I feel like. So
when I started out, and I tweet here and there, but you know, when I do, it's because I do have something to say, but it is admittedly a little sporadic.
All right. We'll link in the show notes, and we'll be on our toes for when you next tweet. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
You've been listening to All Together, the Family Science Insights podcast, produced by the Family Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 life management perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it so that we can grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at fa.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Dina Sargent. Thanks for tuning in.